This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil, the boys are back. Let's talk sports.
How did she know I was going to be here? Neil Headley in for Wally this morning on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Of course, Naz is here. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. Listen, I'm honored to get the call from you guys anytime that you shoot me a note and say, hey, would you come in and sit in on the show? But no time more honored than to be a part of today's show. So thank you for the phone call.
You're very welcome.
Today, the show is all about paying tribute to one of the great legends of sports, one of the great legends of Toronto sports. You could maybe make the argument one of the classiest guys to ever wear a uniform for any Toronto sports team, in that we lost Roy Halladay, a Toronto Blue Jays legend at the age of 40 earlier this week, with a plane crash that caught everybody by surprise.
Yeah, you were 70 miles away from the crash, weren't you, when you were...
Yeah, I was because if you're a regular listener to Zoomer Radio, you know that Norm Edwards and I were down in Fort Myers and Sanibel for the week and seeing our way around. And part of that was taking a fishing charter that took us out into the Gulf of Mexico. And we heard about Roy Halladay's crash while we were in the Gulf, 70 miles south of where it happened. And that area, I mean, they know Roy Halladay real well down there, because not only did the Blue Jays have training camp not far from where we were, but the Phillies have training camp not far from there. You know, you've got so many Canadians and Torontonians in particular down there anyway. Everybody was talking about it. You couldn't go anywhere without Roy Halladay being the center of the conversation that day.
Yeah, we took him for granted as a pitcher. I was checking his stats. They're Hall of Fame material.
Oh, no question.
They're that good.
No question. And you might know the criteria for this better than I do, the level of excellence over there at Sky Dome. I don't know what it takes to get up there, but I feel like that's a kind of a glaring omission that he's not there already.
Oh, he should be there already for sure.
You know, and obviously now, I mean, if they can get that done tomorrow so that it's there on opening day when the fans start showing up.
You know, I was talking to Dave Van Horn and he couldn't make the show, but he did the broadcast of his perfect game against Florida, 1-0.
Amazing.
For the Phillies.
Yeah, amazing.
And, you know, the interesting part of that is that he said that they didn't even come close to hitting him that day.
Yeah.
27 up, 27 down.
Yeah, because, I mean, you see like, no hitters and things like that, and you'll see sometimes the pitcher just squeaks through, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's the defense that came to the rescue, and it's all wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for these six or seven spectacular catches. No. That was complete and utter dominance that day.
And then he pitches a no-hitter in the playoffs with the Phillies.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the Jays, when he was second start, he ended up going 8 2/3, and then Higginson hit a home run off him from Detroit.
One of the amazing things about Roy Halladay, there was sort of an up and down trajectory to that career, especially early on. You know, it took him a little while. He didn't find his groove right out of the gate.
No, he had to go back to the minors, and, you know, we have Pat Gillick on and Bob Elliott, and they'll be able to talk about that. That must have been very tough to do.
Yeah, tell me about it, because you, I mean, again, I'm just sitting in the chair for Wally today. You've lined up this cavalcade of amazing guests, so talk about who's on today.
Steve Wallace, who's a snowbird. We're going to talk about the actual plane crash and his experience flying and what it was like flying a plane. And I understand there's a lot of details missing, but that plane is pretty hard to fly, from what I understand.
Well, there's only apparently 20 of them in existence, this Icon A5. Roy Halladay took his out basically as it was rolling off the line, from my understanding. But there's a lot of question about what happened with this plane crash. There are reports that he was hot-dogging it. There are reports that he was not experienced enough to fly what a lot of people in the flying industry call basically a jet ski with wings. You know, there's a lot of questions, and the NTSB, to my knowledge, hasn't come back yet with anything that's, here's what caused the crash.
Yeah, and the guy that owned the aircraft, he's a pilot himself, he went down too.
Yeah, the test pilot was killed in a crash piloting this same plane. So a lot of questions there. I'm fascinated to be able to spend some time talking to Pat Gillick later on as well. Because, I mean, there's a guy who, you know, saw something. And I'm always fascinated by what happens when players get drafted, particularly one who had the trajectory that Roy Halladay did, you know, where he got off to an amazing start and then needed to go back to single-A ball. There was something, obviously, that Pat Gillick and the guys from the Blue Jays saw in Roy Halladay. And I'm fascinated to find out a little bit more about what that was and how Pat Gillick, again, became part of Roy Halladay's career in later years.
Yeah, it's interesting. He scouted him when he was with the Jays in 95, ended up trading for him in 2008, I think. It was 2009.
And then, of course, there's the one-day contract so that he could retire a Toronto Blue Jay, which, again, goes back to the class of the individual.
Yeah, he's definitely there. And the city, you weren't here, but the city was in mourning also. It's Toronto, and it's a pretty big city.
And still is. You know, I mean, there's still a lot of conversation, even while people were gathered in sports bars and whatnot in Toronto last night to watch the Maple Leafs. You couldn't go for very long without hearing somebody bring up Roy Halladay wherever you were. So.
Yeah, you had to bring up the Maple Leafs, did you?
Well,
four in a row, that's pretty good.
It looks like the ship has been righted there.
Mike Babcock is amazing.
He is an amazing guy. And you know, put the lineup into a blender, and it seems like things have come out fine on the other side.
No
Patrick
kidding.
Marleau.
Who needs Austin Matthews, right?
Well.
I'm kidding.
Exactly. Lots of places to go today, and hopefully at some point later on in the show, a chance to work in your calls as well. But lots of great guests on the show today as we talk most of the show today about Roy Halladay, a legend who we may not see the likes of again anytime soon here in the city of Toronto. So we got all of that coming up.
You know, he was ranked second in all-time best players behind Dave Steeb. Pitchers, I mean.
Yeah, and I mean.
And I'm wondering about that.
Okay, in what way?
I think Halladay was a much better pitcher than Steeb.
You know, and it's interesting. I mean, you compare the eras that the two of them, I guess, pitched in and what it took to be a dominant pitcher 20 or 25 years ago compared to what it takes to be a dominant pitcher. Now, that's also part of the conversation we can have with Pat Gillick as well, you know, because the game has evolved. It's kind of the same way that hockey has evolved. You know, it's a very different thing to play in the NHL now compared to when we were sitting watching Keon and Sittler play.
That's for sure. The interesting part about Dave Steeb is that he went through – he was a pitcher. He was an outfielder turned pitcher.
Yep.
And he had to go through the same thing, through A-ball and – the rest of it.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's always something that someone sees, whether it's a coach or a scout. Another thing that I want to kind of explore with Pat Gillick later on when he joins the show after 9:30 is this idea of, you know, among the most recent conversations here we've had in Toronto, people are saying, you know, Mark Burley is a perfect example of a guy who you would think someday would make an amazing pitching coach.
Yep.
But then I wonder, what does it actually take to be a great pitching coach? Because is it just being a great pitcher? I don't know. I got a sense that there's probably more to the picture than that. And maybe Pat Gillick is a guy who can shed some light on, you know, things like that for us. So Roy Halladay, perhaps, as a pitching coach. Was that something that was on the radar?
You know, I heard at one point that he was going to work for the Jays, and then I heard he was going to work for the Phillies. It would be interesting to ask Pat if there was ever a situation that Halladay could have joined the Phillies, because – Pat is still involved with the Phillies.
And we have a guest coming up in just a couple minutes here from the Snowbirds, too, right?
Steve Wallace, yeah.
All right. Steve Wallace is going to be joining us seconds from now when the Naz and Wally Sports Show continues.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville brought back the large five-topping pizza special for just $13.99 for a limited time. I'm whispering because the last time Pizzaville brought back this special, there was pandemonium in the streets, pushing, shoving, biting. So order now and order often, and hopefully you won't have any bite marks when this is over. Call Pizzaville for the large five-topping pizza special at £3636 from your cell phone. Shh.
There's an old saying. Entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steels Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steels Paint, 4190 Steels Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Neil Headley in for my friend Wally here and hanging out with Naz this morning. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, you're very welcome.
It's been such a long time since you guys invited me on the show. I thought I had done something wrong the last time I was here.
Yeah, no, you've never done anything wrong.
Honored to be here as a part of a tribute show that is being done today for the memory of Roy Halladay, and a lot of great guests coming in, not the least of whom can speak to the idea behind actually sitting behind the controls in an airplane.
Steve Wallace, a decorated Gulf of War veteran, flew with the Snowbirds and the Canadian Forces Aerial Demonstration Team. And he's on the line.
Steve, good morning.
How are you?
Hey, good morning, fellas. How are you?
Well, we're all right. I mean, relatively speaking, obviously, you know, with a show like this, you're, you know, the city of Toronto still in mourning over one of the great legends in our sports history here. Let me start off with just a quick one for you. How hard to fly is a plane like the one Roy Halladay was flying?
Yeah, the Icon A5 was designed to be brutally easy to fly, easy and safe. You could manhandle it as grossly as you could imagine, and the airplane was designed to be fully safe, stay flying.
Steve, was Roy Halladay's qualifications good enough to fly that plane?
Oh, definitely. It's reported that he had over 700 flying hours. That's pretty extensive for somebody in the civilian world. I would imagine, I don't know the actual specifics of when he got licensed, but 700 hours indicates to me probably somebody's been flying for, well, at least half a decade easily.
Now, you've got this amazing resume as a pilot, not only the Snowbirds and your time in the forces, and thank you for your service, by the way,
and
relief missions and all sorts of things that you've done. You know, you're as big an expert on this kind of thing as there is out there. So let me throw some ideas at you that I've heard just kind of expressed, because you might have heard off the beginning of the show, I was in the Gulf on a fishing charter 70 miles from where Roy Halladay went into the water, and everybody around that area was instantly talking about all kinds of speculation. So there is the idea out there that has been expressed that maybe, and even there are witnesses that will back up this idea, that maybe Roy Halladay was hot dogging a little bit. But then there are other people who will say, depending on the level of expertise of the pilot, you might be so busy trying to, you know, not crash that's why maybe the Mayday call is apparently never reported to have happened. Where do you come down on this? I mean, what are you hearing and what's your experience?
Yeah, I mean, there's It is all speculation, obviously. The FAA is still investigating, and we'll find out probably within a month or so something definitive. The good news is they had some data recorders on board the aircraft, so that should be fairly simple to rule out if there's anything wrong with the airplane. And usually it comes down to one of two faults. It's either something mechanically wrong with the aircraft. The other one is, the man interface, the human interface with the aircraft. It's a pilot problem.
Steve,
now, totally speculation. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's totally speculation. It could be one or the other. I recall seeing the initial video of a witness before the accident. I was a little bit shocked by the maneuver I saw. It was fairly abrupt, and as a matter of fact, it was long distance, so the fidelity wasn't great. I thought maybe did the wings come off that airplane? Because it's diving fairly quickly, and then it leveled off, and it seemed to cruise, almost like wave top level until the video ended. That showed me a couple of things. First of all, that pilot was highly skilled because that was a pretty abrupt maneuver. What I thought was something catastrophic was obviously meant to be controlled. Yeah, there's a couple other things that could happen. Go ahead.
Yeah, Steve, what made you get into flying? I just want to get it.
Wow, you guys are Toronto-based. The old Buttonville Airport.
I think I flew with you one day.
We can probably say it now, Naz.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we skipped out at school once.
That's
went
right.
Up to the Maple Airport and got an hour's flight in. There's no doubt in my mind we did that.
My wife never believed that story. She is now, though.
Yeah, it's kind of fuzzy because it was so long ago, right, Naz?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, Buttonville Airport. My uncle was a pilot there, and I remember my mom taking me out as a young gaffer and saying, "Hey, that's your uncle up there with your dad," and it kind of stuck with me.
Yeah, because you have to have a certain psyche to fly a plane. Because I have no aspirations of doing it, and not many people do. But there must be a certain high to flying a plane.
Well, that goes back to the thrill. I mean, even Doc's wife initially had some trepidation about him buying the airplane. And then she went out to the training center one day and hopped in, apparently, and she was sold on it. She said, "Hey, this is great. I get it now. Slipping the surly bonds of Earth. It's a real thing. It is fun."
Well, and talk to me about this plane. I mean, I've heard this thing referred to as a jet ski with wings. You've probably seen that reference as well. And one of the things that stuck out and one of the things that everybody was talking about this plane early on wasn't the test pilot for this plane also killed in a crash testing out this same plane?
Yeah, the aircraft, the Icon A5, it's been on the dream sheet for over a decade. It took a long time to come to production. They actually didn't start producing for the customers till just this early this year. Matter of fact, I don't think Doc's aircraft was delivered until last month. Yeah, there's been a couple accidents. There's been three fatalities to date. Three accidents. The first one, actually, the aircraft, just a hard landing on the water. It actually sank before it could be recovered. Nobody was injured or nobody was killed in that one. The lead engineer and the lead test pilot were killed just over a month ago in California. They were doing some testing and decided to do some what I would consider stunt flying. The way it was recorded, they were doing some canyon flying, and it looks like what we call controlled flight into terrain, where you just, the world record for flying as low and as fast as possible to the ground has been set at zero, and you can't beat that. And unfortunately, that's very unforgiving, and it sounds like what happened to the two company chaps just a little while back. And then now Doc is the third hull loss, aircraft loss, and obviously a third fatality.
Do they have to go through certain – don't they have certain certifications that the plane has to pass before they can fly them, Steve?
Yeah, well, I'll focus on the pilot stuff. There is a ton of engineering that has to occur and testing to get the aircraft licensed in the United States through the FAA. But with the pilots, as a matter of fact, Icon has a pretty good marketing and branding thing. And, yes, they did market it as it's a sport utility aircraft. But it's meant to be fun. It's not meant to go long distances. It's not really a transportation vessel. It's competing with the high-speed toys that folks love like on the water, like Sea-Doos and high-speed boats. It's to compete with that market. So it's meant to be fun, and sometimes that can, you know, make people step out of their comfort level and get into some crazy flying it.
You know, and that's that was one of the things when you hear about that reference to it being a jet ski with wings. You know, that was, and it's interesting to hear you make a similar reference to it there, because the first thing that we started asking while we were, you know, and we had limited access to information, we were out on a fishing charter in the Gulf, and we started asking the question, well, where was he going? Where was he flying to? But this sounds like just something you take out for the same reason you take a jet ski out. You're not going someplace. You're just out to have fun.
That's correct. It's not the destination. It's the journey. You're out there to have a little bit of a blast. Going back to the pilot training, ICON has it's contractually, you have to do a certification training with their pilots at their training centers to get in this thing. Now, sometimes it's not extensive. If you're an experienced pilot like Doc, it probably involves, you know, a three-day course, up to five flying hours to get qualified. And then, you know, it's even branded. Apparently, there's it's quoted in one of the documents or flying magazines that up to 40% of the orders are from non-pilots. People are looking for a thrill, and then they can go to the training centers and get trained to the minimum level right from ground zero, basically.
Steve, I got to let you go because you're doing a roughing seminar, I guess, today in the for the GTHO.
Tell me a bit about Lands Arena.
Tell me a bit about your refereeing. Since this is a sports show, go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. I'm a board-appointed volunteer with the Greater Toronto Hockey League, largest hockey league in the world. We have over 40,000 players. I'm the director of officiating, responsible for all the training development of all the on-ice officials, their supervisors, and their instructors for all the minor hockey in the Greater Toronto area. And this morning we have a new supervisor seminar out at Icelands Arena.
Very good.
All right. Steve Wallace, legendary pilot here, and on certainly on our side of the border and around the world as well. Steve, thanks for taking some time to help us clarify some of the technical points of what happened to Roy Halladay. Appreciate the time.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Neil. And happy birthday, buddy, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks, Steve.
All right, Steve. Wait a minute. Happy birthday. What is that about?
I turned 35 today, so.
Wow, well, happy. See, if I'd known, I wouldn't have eaten all the cake. I just thought that was leftovers from last week.
Interesting that he wished me a birthday on the show, but that's good. That's good.
it's Neil in for Wally. Of course, Naz is here, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, with guests including Pat Gillick and legendary sports writer Bob Elliott. All that coming up.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised that people may not know how many different kinds of ponzos Pizzaville makes. You can go Italian if you like a sausage. You can go Hawaiian if you like ham and pineapple. And you can go Canadian if you like bacon, beer and hockey. We can build a ponzo that speaks your language, no matter where you are from. Call Pizzaville at 736-3636. Or visit pizzaville.ca.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues, price and cost. Most prices are competitive, will likely save you money too, but the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the number 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Neil Headley from the Happy Gang in for Wally here this morning. Of course, Naz is here as well. Good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning.
We are paying tribute this morning to Roy Halladay and talking to some of the people who really, you know, at least from a perspective of knowing the man, there are a few sports writers, I would say, in the country, if not anywhere.
Not too many.
Exactly, that know or knew Roy Halladay, as well as our next guest, Bob Elliott, legendary sports writer, joins the show this morning. Bob, how are you, sir?
All right, gentlemen. Nice to be up this early, yeah.
Where to even start? Let me ask you the simple question, because you've been covering Toronto sports, I think, since Toronto sports were invented. Is there ever going to be another Roy Halladay in the city of Toronto?
That's going to be tough to duplicate what the man did with the complete games and that, because the game is so the game is so geared to like 5 innings for the starter, unless your name is Kershaw or maybe Chris Sale, but. What he did was, when they gave him the ball, whether it was Cito Gaston or Gibbons or Tim Johnson, whoever it was, he was supposed to, you know, he didn't want to give it up until the 9 innings were done, you know. And I don't know what he had, 60, 70 complete games, which is from the time he broke in until now, nobody has more.
Neil and I were talking earlier, Bob, and is he a first ballot Hall of Famer, Roy?
I would think he is. I would think, the other thing I would maybe caution, it's like the statue, it's like the retiring the number. I mean, that's a talking point, but I don't know, you know, like, I think it's still real early to argue or decide any of those things. You know, I think he's eligible in 2019, but, you know, like that funeral or the ceremony or whatever is on Tuesday, and, you know, you got a wife without a husband, the parents without a kid, and 2 sisters without a brother, and, you know, I guess my head's still around the 2 boys without that have lost their father.
Well, and that's the thing about him, you know, is the example that he set for others. I mean, not just the 2 boys, but I mean, there are so many players in Major League Baseball who call, even having been, you know, on the same team with this guy, such an honor because of everything he brought, not just when he was standing on the mound, but even in the clubhouse and in training camp and everything else that he brought to the table, right?
That's correct. Yeah, there was certainly a giant outpouring of affection from not only Phillies and not only Blue Jays, but guys who faced him. Like, I mean, Yankees and Red Sox, and on the Twitter machine. But I can't think of anything that I can compare it to for. And hopefully I don't have to, you know, somebody gone that young. I mean, he was known as a workaholic. He ran the stairs, ran the stadium, did the powerlifting, ran the left field foul pole to the right field foul pole. So why? So he could become good at his profession, so he could make some money, look after his family. So he hurts his shoulder, he retires, and he's been gone for like 4 years, and now he's retired for 4 years, and now poof, he's gone at age 40. It's hard. It's really hard to believe. And I think Tuesday night I was listening, and I heard like 4 straight guys just break up at talking about him. You know, and these are a couple of them are grizzled ball players that. Tough guys, so I don't know. It's just a shame. He was first class all the way.
Well, and you talk about the people that faced, and we're talking to a legendary sports writer, Bob Elliott. The piece that you wrote a couple days ago about Roy Halladay mentions Derek Jeter, right? Tell me about the Jeter reference.
Well, Sutcliffe, I think it was, on their one of their tours of Japan, I think it was, or a Nike tour. They were just shooting the breeze, having lunch, and he said, who's the best, and before he could say pitcher he ever faced, Jeter answered Roy Halladay.
How difficult was it, Bob, for him to go back to single A and retool again?
He was not happy. I was there that day. You know, the first week of spring training, there aren't any games, and you would hear, like, Buck was managing that year, or Mark Connor, the pitching coach, or Gordash, they would say, oh, did you see Roy Halladay's bullpen? Did you see how good Halladay looks? And then he'd get in the game, and it was terrible. And then the next bullpen would be good, and they'd get in the game, and it would be another bad one. And so we walked in, and it was, I'll never forget, they said, well, we're sending Roy Halladay out. Oh, okay, to Syracuse, somebody said. And Buck said, no, we're not sending him to Syracuse. Oh, to Knoxville, double A. No, we're going to leave him here at Dunedin. And so I said, oh, because of the weather, because, you know, weather in upstate New York can be bad in April. And he said, no, we want him to start over and work on a few things. And I was like, it was just a shock. Like, could you imagine being told, you know, you finally reached a university and you've been told, hey, I think we want you to go back to grade 9, you know, like that's what it was like. And he was not pleased at all, but it's a credit to the man that he worked so hard at it and so diligently. And, He was a driven guy beforehand, and he certainly was afterwards.
Well, and you talk about, I mean, work ethic and all of those kinds of things as well. Naz and I were chatting just before we got on the air about the idea of what does it take to make that transition, for example. And it's easy to have this conversation about Mark Burley as well. Conversation from great pitcher, clubhouse leader, et cetera, to, for example, pitching coach. Is that the kind of thing? Is a Roy Halladay the kind of guy that you hope for in that kind of position?
As a pitching coach?
Yeah.
Yeah, he wanted to get into that end of it, and he was doing some work with the Phillies, but I think it would have been the year after he retired. I spoke to him in Clearwater, and he said, we got enough guys around that are working on elbows and arms and mechanics. He said, I want to work on heads, because the late Harvey Dorfman helped him with the book, The Mental Game of Pitching, and then the ABCs of baseball, and you know, like how you handle it. And I had bought the kid, I had bought the book a number of times for kids, and here I was, I don't know, maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, walking by his locker once, and there was the book. And I said, what are you doing with that book? And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, I've seen it, and it's very, very good. And he said, that's about my 7th copy, because I said, why? Did you lose him? And he said, no, he would read it before every start, and he showed me how he had underlined passages, and, you know, with the yellow highlighter. And then he'd start all over again, you know, when the book ran out. The other exercise he used to do, he showed me this. They had squares from 1 to 100, and you had to find 1 and then 2 and or 3, and like they weren't in order; they were all jumbled. And he would time himself on how he did to heighten his focus.
Wow. We're talking to Bob Elliott, legendary sports writer here on the Naz and Wally Sports
Hour. Legendary is a word for old. I know that.
See, we don't use that word here on Zoomer Radio.
All right.
But I tell you, I mean, he was also, for guys who do what you do for a living, an easy guy to cover too, wasn't he?
Well, he wasn't easy. He wasn't easy. Like, he was tough to catch, because when he started, like, I don't know, in 2000, 2001, I mean, in those days, you'd walk in to the clubhouse 2 hours before, 3 hours before first pitch, and there might be 20 guys out of 25 sitting at their locker or playing cards or watching TV or whatever. Nowadays, you walk in, and there might be 5 guys sitting at their locker, and they're on the phone or they're doing their iPad or something, but he was seldom at his locker, because he was going from one back room to another to work out, but or to run or whatever. But he, when you did get him, he always had time, and it was, you know, could we set up an interview for tomorrow? And I've heard this story about 10 guys tell this story. Yeah, sure. Well, how about 7 tomorrow? And for writers and TV people who just work nights, that's an awful time, right? But 7 a.m., right? So he goes, people will say, yeah, okay, 7 a.m., is that when you're getting here? No, that's when I'm finished my workout, so we can talk then. So he would get, I went to see him once at Clearwater with the Phillies, and I think I got there at 4:45, and he was already there.
Wow, man. Incredible work ethic.
Wow.
Bob, his intensity during the game day, is that all true where he didn't talk to anyone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mike Shaw, I talked to him years ago. He was laughing. I saw him and the last day of spring training at the complex before they go down to the stadium. They'd always play an inter-squad game, a fun game. It used Joe Carter started it. It was like for pizza and soda or whatever. Whoever got to pay, whoever they ordered them, and then the losing side had to pay. So here comes Mike tells the story about walking along the path, and Halliday's coming one way, and he's coming the other way. Mike's the traveling secretary. And, you know, he says, what, it's an inter-squad game, no big deal. He says, hi, Roy. And, you know, he's trying to be polite. And Halliday never said a word.
Wow.
He was that zoned in for an inter-squad game to face his own guys.
Incredible.
Honored to spend some time this morning with Bob Elliott, legendary sports writer, even though he thinks that word means old. Listen, man, thanks for taking the time. It's an honor to talk to you this morning. Thanks for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks,
all right,
Bob.
Thank you. Thanks. Wow, we got elevated to gentleman there. Did you notice that?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
It's the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. My name's Neil. I'm in for Wally this morning. Of course, Naz is here, and we're honored by the presence of another legend joining us on the line.
Two World Series winners.
Absolutely.
92, 93. Pat Gillick. Good morning, Pat.
Morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Pat, talk to us about this is the thing that I'm fascinated with the most about. I mean, there are so many elements of Roy Halladay's life and career that one can focus on. But as a guy who watched him at the very, very beginning, I'm interested to hear what it is that, you know, he comes to the majors, he has those disastrous one disastrous season and goes back down to single A ball. At what point does a team look at a guy like that? Because at that point, you flip a coin, do you? Or how do you know that somebody is going to come back from that versus the guys who never will?
Well, I don't know what's been discussed on the program prior to this, but we had been on Roy Halladay since he was 14 years of age. We had a scout in Denver, Colorado, Buzz Campbell, and really Buzz, Tim Wilk and Bob Engler are responsible for getting Roy into the organization. And so we had a history on him from the time that he was a sophomore in high school at Arvada West High School in Denver, Colorado. So we knew what kind of a person that we were drafting in the first round in 1995. I was not the GM at the time. Gordy Ash took over, and I was an advisor to Gordy. But and not talking about Roy, but talking a little bit about my situation. When I came in as a general manager, I thought 80% of baseball was the physical part and 20% was the mental part. But as I learned as I went along, I found out it was more like 60% ability and 40% mental. And that's what Roy Halladay had over many of the pitchers in the major leagues today. It was the mental skills. So consequently, to answer your question, when he went down and did what was a remarkable job of changing his arm angle, he and Mel Queen, and coming back to the major leagues, we had confidence at that time that he was going to make that adjustment. I was no longer with the Blue Jays, but I was talking to Gordy Ash and Mel Queen and Bob Maddock were there, and they were very confident just because of Roy's mental makeup that he could make this adjustment and come back.
Pat, you ended up trading for him later with Philadelphia. What was the reaction of the Philly fans to Roy Halladay when he was there?
You know, he was, you know, the thing about Roy is he had such tremendous credibility. You know, he's really a dream for a baseball executive. He was a dream for a fan. He was an outstanding individual, an outstanding fierce competitor on the mound. And at the other, on the other side of the flip coin, you know, he was a great, great, you know, fan's dream. As many of you know, maybe don't know, you know, there was a place at Rogers Center called Doc's Box, and he especially donated that box for the kids at Sick Kids Children's Hospital, and he donated $100,000 every year to Jay's Care. So he was not only a tremendous talent on the field and a tremendous competitor, as I said. He was a wonderful, wonderful guy and a great family guy off the field.
You know, we were talking a couple minutes ago to Bob Elliott, legendary sports writer, of course, and I asked him this question. I'll put the same thing to you. You look at a guy like Doc Halladay, and we can also think about him in Toronto. I would put him in the same category with, for example, a Mark Burley, in that I look at those guys as players who would be able to effectively make the transition from, you know, legendary player over to potentially great coach. Is that, am I right at looking in, at Roy Halladay as kind of the guy who was in the middle of making that transition, and probably we can look at him now and think about all of the careers he could have impacted as a coach?
Yeah, he made a tremendous impact. Not, you know, when he first came, when he came over, certainly from a performance standpoint, but then the last you know, year and a half, he's been a mental skills coach in our minor league system. And And Roy and his, and Brandy and his two children live north of Tarpon. And so he spent a lot of time at our complex, which is, you know, 15, 20 minutes south in Clearwater, with our younger pitchers coming in for the first time. When our pitchers come into the Philly system, they come initially to Clearwater, and they either play with the Gulf Coast League team or one of the extended programs. And Roy was heavily involved with our younger pitchers from the mental skills standpoint. Probably, I don't know if it's been mentioned, but, you know, he was a client of Harvey Dorfman, who was probably one of the first really sports psychologists. And it's amazing that, that Doc went through this transition you mentioned when he went down to Dunedin and changed his arm ankle. But another guy who was a very different pitcher from Roy was Jamie Moyer, and he was also a client of Harvey Dorfman. And he was a guy who, I always said, the people that are usually in trouble in the big leagues are people that throw average. You either got to throw above average or below average. And so we had two pitchers, Roy who threw above average, and we had Moyer who threw slow, slower, and slower.
Forgive the abrupt turn on this, but, you know, you talk about the mental aspect of the game, and you talk about the hurdles that Roy Halladay had to clear. And I think about that in terms of so many other players. Naz probably knows exactly what I'm about to ask you, and forgive me if you don't have necessarily experience with this particular player. But if you got to strip it right back down to the wood to take a guy that you know has all kinds of talent. I think about, for example, currently in the Blue Jays organization, I think about Ryan Goins, and I think about a kid that obviously has all of the physical ability in the world, but for some reason just can't seem to get it done at the plate. I mean, is that a mental thing that somebody just needs to take a player like that, like they did for Roy Halladay, and just take him right back to the beginning and start over? Or what do you do with the player that you look and you see all that potential, but it's just not clicking?
I think what you do is you basically, you have to be supportive of that player, and you have to encourage that player. And that's where somebody, though he was a pitcher, he still has, Doc still had the credibility. He's only 4 or 5 years removed, so a lot of the players that are now 22, 23 years of age, they were 18 when Doc was finishing his career. So when Roy Halladay shows up, he has instant credibility. And so I think if I was Roy, I would certainly, you know, work on the mental aspect, you know, because it's You know, you can pound and pound and practice and practice the physical aspect, but if you don't have the right mindset, if you don't have the right mental approach, then if you don't have the right focus, then you're not going to be successful. And so that's what, you know, Roy really immersed himself as. I don't know if Bob had mentioned this, but, you know, before a game, he would not talk to anyone, not the media, not his teammates. The only two people that he ever talked to prior to the game, because he was completely immersed in what pitches he was going to throw that game. He'd only talk to the manager and the pitching coach. He talked to no one else until the game was completed. And so that was the type of concentration, the type of focus he had. And that's what he was trying. He was attempting and was being successful in our organization, because I talked to our director of player development last night, and he said it's a tremendous loss to the Philly organization, Roy Halladay, because he was doing a great job, you know, with our younger people coming into the organization.
Pat, is Roy a Hall of Famer?
You know, you look at his career, it's a short career, and you look at Sandy Koufax's career, and it was a short career. He's just short of 100 games over 500. I think he's like 203 and 105, something like that. And the other things he's done postseason, you know, no-hitter, perfect games, I would think he would certainly have strong consideration, because when you're 100 games, almost 100 games over 500, that's a pretty remarkable feat right there. And the other things that he did, pitched an extra inning shutout. He and Jack Morris were the only two guys to pitch extra inning shutouts, you know, since 1991. I would certainly think being on the All-Star team as many times as he won, winning a Cy Young in the National and American League. There's a lot of very, very positive things that I think the BBWA would have to look at, and you know, I certainly would support. If I was asked, which I am being asked, I would support him for the Hall of Fame.
We're talking to one of the all-time baseball legends here in Pat Gillick here on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. My name's Neil, in for Wally. Naz, of course, is here. Pat, are we ever going to see the pendulum in baseball swing back to the Roy Halladay-style pitcher where you can, for example, pitch an extra inning shutout, or are we too much into the era of specialization and guys who come in for an out or two and we're never going to go back there?
Well, I think we're in a period of specialization for certain right now. I might say this, over-specialization. I'm really a proponent of balance. If you need balance on your baseball team, you need balance in your thought thinking. So consequently, there certainly is a place for analytics and for statistics in baseball. I think that's what we all grew up with. People on the listeners on now, he grew up with statistics. I mean, you don't throw them out, and it's just like a horse race. You look at what the sheet says, and you know what a horse has done in the future, and you look at the statistics, and you got a pretty good idea what a hitter or a pitcher has done in the past. So consequently, you have to look at that. But right now, it's kind of, the pendulum has kind of gone along the other way, and I think it's going to be a while before we get a balance back. I think this thing's going to have to kind of run out. Not that I'm not opposed to analytics. I think they're a part of the information you have to have. But again, you have to have the analytics, and you have to have that balanced with the physical observation by a scout of the human being playing in a game.
Pat, we were talking earlier off air about Dave Steeb. He was an outfielder and he turned into a pitcher. Do you see similarities with him and Roy?
Could you repeat that? You kind of broke up a little bit.
We were talking about Dave Steeb. He was an outfielder turned pitcher, right? And did he go through the same things as Roy Halladay did when he had to go start at A-ball again?
You know, and I say this in a positive manner, Dave Steeb was sort of a freak, one of those guys who, if you look at his minor league career, he had a very, very short minor league career. He was someone who adapted and almost became a pitcher overnight. It was really phenomenal. Just if you look back at his very, very short minor league career, he'd been an All-American center fielder at Southern Illinois University, and you know, two of our scouts, Don Welke and Al Lamaki and Bob Maddock, they just happened to catch him two innings in the back end of a game and decided to draft him. And, you know, within a short period of time, I want to say year and a half, he was in the big league. So he was just one of those really naturally talented people and really took to pitching very quickly. Dave really didn't have to work at it. He was a tremendous athlete, and things just became very, very natural to him.
You know, you talk about all of the off-field stuff for Roy Halladay, and, you know, I've made the suggestion even this week a few times that Roy Halladay might be the classiest guy to ever put on a uniform for a Toronto sports team. But let's talk about the on-field stuff just for a second. Is there... You know, so many times, and it happens across all sports, someone will come along and people will look and say, oh, this is the next incarnation of whoever, whether it's Jeter, or this is the next incarnation of, even in hockey, this is the next incarnation of Wayne Gretzky, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is there somebody out there that's got your attention maybe that for now might even be flying under the radar that you look at and you go, that could be, in terms of on-field stuff, that could be the next Roy Halladay right there?
I really can't, put my finger on somebody, you know, at the moment that might fill that bill, because again, a lot of it goes back to the mental aspect, and, you'd have to know the player. You have to get to know the player. That's why I mentioned at the top of the call that we knew Halladay from the age of 14. So, We knew the individual. I would have to know the individual and see what I felt his makeup was, what his work ethic was, what his determination was, if he was persistent, if he was focused, if he had concentration. And those are all things that go into being a successful athlete, be it whatever sport you're in. So I can't really put my finger on that because, I'd have to know the player and know a little bit more what makes this guy tick before I can make that determination.
Inductee into the level of excellence at Sky Dome, Pat Gillick, taking some time this morning with the Nasenwali Sports Hour. Pat, thank you so much for the time this morning. Really appreciate it.
Well, I thank you very much. And, you know, I think it was just, it's wonderful that the fans of Toronto, you know, got to see Roy both on and off the field. And I think we're all... You know, it's really a tragedy and really a great loss, you know, to the baseball fraternity, Roy's passing. It's just, I just still can't believe that it happened, and I'm totally shocked by what happened in the accident.
Thanks, Pat.
All right, bye-bye.
Pat Gillick there with the Nasenwali Sports Hour. And what he said at the end of the call, I think still sums up how so many people, you know, feel about what happened. It's one of those that you never saw coming. And it's, I think for a lot of sports fans in Toronto, I think they're looking at it and thinking, I wish we had honored this guy more when he was around.
I haven't heard a bad thing said about Roy Hall.
It's true.
Halladay. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You think you'd hear something, but nothing.
No, and those players are rare, right? When universally everything that's said about them, you know, with the exception of that one Yahoo in Boston, that everything that's said about somebody is just nothing but positive.
It's interesting how Bob Elliott and Pat's answers were similar.
They're pretty much, same, yeah. Well, it was interesting. I mean, that's the thing about Roy Halladay, right? He was the same guy all the time to everybody. There wasn't a special treatment thing with him. He was who he was, and there was no being on his good side or bad side. He had his side, and that was it.
Yeah, and it's definitely, we took him for granted as a player here. We didn't realize how good he really was.
Well, and maybe, you know, that's one of those things that as a major league city, that we need to look at what we do with our sports teams and our professional athletes and all that going forward is how many Roy Halladays are out there in terms of their impact on the game, even just on paper, that we haven't necessarily taken the time to recognize how lucky we have it for so many great players in this city.
And we've had Pat Gillick on the show before, but he can walk on water here.
Yeah.
You don't realize how popular he is.
Yeah, exactly.
If they ever offered him the job as president again or general manager, the fans would go crazy and love it.
He's only 80. He could take that on.
Look at Lou Lamoriello.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. Listen, thanks for having me in this morning. This was a treat and an honor.
No problem. Thank you for taking the chair.
Because like I said, you know, I was 70 miles away on a fishing charter in the Gulf when it went down. And that's all anybody could talk about in Florida was the passing of Roy Halladay. So
it's interesting what Steve Wallace said. That it was a recreational plane. It was just...
Yeah, which goes back to that whole jet ski with wings thing that we've been hearing all week, too. Of course, lots more to come with that. I mean, the NTSB still hasn't weighed in with exactly what went wrong, but that is a question that's got everybody's attention, and it'll be fascinating. By the time you and Wally get back together next week, who knows? Maybe we'll have some answers.
Yeah, Wally will be back next week.
And, all right.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Thanks a ton, Naz. Appreciate it. It's Zoomer Radio AM 740, Downtown FM 96.7, and the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Thanks for having us.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.